Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Kate. We'd like to welcome everybody to the show today. We're both kind of not quite where we need to be to host the show, but it's okay. We're getting there. And today is, what's today? September 3rd?
3rd.
Mm-hmm. If you're listening now at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, you're listening live with us, and we're so glad that you joined us. We'd love to take your call today, and the call number is 1-718. Oh, and now it's left me. Kate, do you remember it?
Yeah. Let me get that number. 1-718-766-4332.
Now it came back to me. Yeah, and we'd love to take your call today. We are talking about the same topic that we've talked about for the last couple of weeks, and that's treating speech disorders in young children. And remember, we've talked about apraxia and the defining characteristics for that, and we've talked about phonological disorders. And, you know, Kate, last week you asked such a good question about, okay, so when a kid is making the kinds of errors that we've been talking about, how would a speech pathologist really differentiate apraxia from phonological disorders, because sometimes the errors are practically the same. And I thought about something that's in the DVD that I don't think I've said on the show. But lots of speech pathologists think about phonological disorders as kind of the sound component for a kid who has a significant language disorder. And so I think that that's why so many speech pathologists just kind of assume that it's a phonological disorder when sounds are messed up if a kid has delayed language.
Right.
Now, kind of looking at the motor speech aspect of it. So if you think about a phonological disorder really just kind of be the sound component of a language disorder, that's how lots of people look at it. Not so sure that I'm totally 100% convinced that kids with language disorders automatically are going to lean more toward a phonological disorders diagnosis to accompany that if the speech sound system is messed up, but that I think that is kind of the line of thinking for lots of people.
Right, and I think I tried to make the point last week that because we worked with such young kids, 0 to 3 in our early intervention program, you know, you have to get them talking before you begin to recognize any patterns. And a lot of the kids we see, at least initially, have no words or one word or so.
And you can't really make a distinction at that point because there are not enough words to even analyze, really, to kind of know which one it is.
Right. And since I'm a developmental interventionist and not a speech therapist, I don't waste too many brain cells myself on, is this phonological or is this apraxia? I just do what I know, thanks to you, to do to get them talking, you know. So
right.
It probably falls on somebody else's shoulders at some point to determine, why is this child having difficulty talking? And on that note, Laura, we need to say, Laura has finished her apraxia DVD, which is a monumental success. So
I know, and it is shipping. If you've ordered it, there was a little bit of delay in those initial orders, but they are all shipping now, and it's a great, I hope it's going to be a great resource for people because I've really spent a lot of time on it, and there's lots of clinical information on there. And, again, the focus is on intervention. It's a 2-DVD set. The whole first part kind of background, and then the last couple of hours are strictly devoted to intervention. So should be lots and lots of good therapy clips for you to see.
Well, I know it'll be great. I think that there is a real lack of great information available about actual what do you do about it. And I like to joke, Laura, because, you know, I work with you, but I work with other therapists, and I always say, I'd like to send it to a few speech therapists I know. Laura happens to be the apraxia queen, so, you know, I just see such a difference in what she does and how she does it and how effective it is. And so I will be watching the DVD, even though we discuss these things ad nauseum hour after. Oh, I literally will be watching DVD. I was just handed one. Yay! It's out there. Anyway, so just wanted everybody to know, and I'm thankful because Laura and her team has been working so hard to get it done that she has been exhausted. So I know she's happy.
I am happy to kind of wrap that up. It does feel like it's kind of been a long haul, but it's well worth it. And now I feel like it's the whole set because, you know, the first DVD was about expressive language, and then the second two, that set's about receptive language, and this is about speech intelligibility. So it should kind of cover the whole gamut between language things and speech things. I'm having a really hard time getting my notes out here, so sorry for the background noise.
Yeah, well, you know, you started with kind of basics, teach me to talk, just for kids who are having language delays, but not specific, not a speech disorder like apraxia. And apraxia is a complex topic. It's difficult to talk about, and frankly, it's pretty difficult to treat, because these are not the kids that we do our little tricks and poof, they get better. And, you know, we all love those kids, and they're out there, but, you know, almost by definition, apraxic kids take just a little longer to have those successes and begin to see some real progress. So it makes sense that the last one was difficult to complete because it's a big topic and hard to express. So, but it's done.
Yay. Okay, now I've kind of got my bearings. Let's jump back in and talk about, kind of pick up where we left off last week, with treating those real specific sound issues. We might back up just a little bit, though, and let me share with you some information that I've found that talks about when to know that a child really has a speech sound disorder versus when it's just kind of a speech delay. And I just finally got the articles written about this, too, and they're on the website at teachmetotalk.com. And the article that we're going to be talking about, this first part, first section of information is called Speech Sound Development. And the first part of the article goes through, and it uses some norms from a couple of different tests or researchers. And so I kind of combined some of their information, but I've broken it down so that you can see what sounds are acquired by what age. And we can just kind of start talking about that. And again, it's going to give the red flags so that therapists and moms can know, okay, this isn't just a little delay. It might take some special effort here. You know, and you'll remember that delays mean that things are coming in on time, but the order is the same. But it's just a matter of time. They're just a little bit behind, and eventually we think they're going to catch up. And disorder means that something is more atypical in development, and things kind of may be all over the place as you get some skills that are attained at an earlier age level, and you might get some skills and get some that are thought to be later developing. And again, there's no real pattern there, so that's more atypical.
And where are we going to find that, Laura?
It's on the website at teachmetotalk.com,
mm-hmm.
And it's in articulation.
Okay.
The name of the article is called Speech Sound Development.
Okay.
And so, again, this is going to be the sounds that we're talking about, and the age levels are going to be when 75% of all children have mastered these sounds. And so that would be considered kind of normal. And then that other 10% of kids that say kind of fall between the 75% cutoff to that next 85%, those are the kids that we kind of consider borderline or at risk. And then the kids that are in that last 10 to 15% are going to be the kids that we think of as disordered, if we think about 100% of children. So the norm that we're going to be using today, we're talking about when 75% of children have mastered a particular sound or use a particular pattern. Does that make sense?
It does to me, but I just wanted to say for people who are trying to find it, I think it might be under intelligibility instead of articulation.
You know what? And I think that because that's the new category, and we changed all the, sorry about that, we changed all of the articles from articulation to that title.
Which is kind of, they're certainly related terms. So, you know, just putting out there for people who are looking for articulation. Look for intelligibility, and you will find the article Laura's talking about.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, because I am not on the website.
Okay.
All right. So our first point with this really is going to be talking about consonant sounds. We're talking a lot about consonant sounds today, but if you'll remember our previous discussions, children with apraxia screw up vowel sounds too. So if you have a child that is really, like he tries to say boo and he pops out b or ba instead of that nice oo for boo, if you have a kid that tries to say please and he says pa, or a kid that tries to say ball and he says ba or bi or ba or anything, you know, but the right target, those kids more than likely have apraxia, or they could also have maybe low muscle tone, because kids with low muscle tone have those vowel distortions as well. But we're really going to be talking about consonants today. And limited consonant sound production usually makes you really, really hard to understand. Speech pathologists call that unintelligible speech. And it does usually indicate a motor speech disorder like apraxia or a phonological disorder. So, again, it's not really typical development if you have a kid that's not using lots of different consonant sounds. And then the normal for consonant sound usage is that by 18 months, a child would produce 3 to 6 different consonant sounds in word approximations. And so if you have a 2-year-old who's just using 2 or 3 consonant sounds, that lets you know right away, gosh, there's something wrong with his speech sound development. He doesn't have the right number of sounds in his sound inventory or repertoire, or whatever word that a speech pathologist might use for that. Okay. So by 18 months, we want them to have 3 to 6 different consonant sounds. And lots of children, too, have, when you look at lots of different children, they may not all have the same 3 to 6. It's just important that they use at least that many sounds. By 24 months, so by that second birthday, we want children to have at least 6 to 8 different consonant sounds and produce most of those vowel sounds correctly. And again, you might have a little vowel error here or there, but if you have a child that's doing lots of word approximations and lots of different vowels are off, again, I hope that after this discussion that that will automatically make you think, he might be apraxic, because that is usually what that indicates, or again, low muscle tone. And let's see. Let's start talking about specific sounds. The sounds that are the earliest to develop, and again, this is based on what 75% of typically developing children use when their little speech samples were analyzed. The sounds that we would want them to have by 24 months would be P, B, M, T, N, D, H, and W. Oh, sorry, W is not on there. P, B, M, T, N, D, H. And this source had K and G, but in my own professional opinion, I think K and G usually comes a little later. What do you think about that, Kate? Do you?
Those do seem to, I mean, for what I consider to be typical, yeah, I would say I'm surprised that they put K and G on there that early.
I was too. You know, and the other thing that these sources really talked about is that with typically developing speech, children are using at least a couple or even maybe up to 3 final sounds by the time that they're turning 2. So the final sounds that usually come in, and by final, I mean consonant sounds used at the ends of words. And this source had that P, M, and N were also there in the last position in words by 24 months. And again, as a speech pathologist, I think sometimes it's closer to 2.5, even in typically developing children, before we start to hear those final sounds come in. But you certainly know that in most typically developing children, they are going to start putting some sounds on the ends of words, even by 24 months. And I remember that with my own children, too, thinking, gosh, they have finals so early. But, you know, my point of reference was delayed kids, not necessarily normal kids. So it was a little surprising to see that 75% of children had PM and N at the ends of words by 24 months. Okay. The next little section says by 28 months, children have added, most children, D and F at the beginning and even a Y, a Y. And then final sounds that would come in
would be, oh, I'm so sorry.
Did you lose it? Final sounds, she's calling in on the other phone, so I will pick up. Were you here, Laura? The final sounds for 24-month-old kids, and again, this is 75% of the kids that were looked at, and that those final sounds are P, M, and N. So these kids produce most vowel sounds correctly and at least 6 to 8 different consonant sounds. Laura's looking to call in here.
Am I on?
Are we here? Hello? Hello? I think I'm here. I'm just going to go ahead and talk. Sorry about all this technical stuff today. Boy, sometimes real life kind of gets in the way of what our professional obligations are. Okay, let me go on and keep talking about by 32 months. And again, this is going to be by 2.5. That W would have come in the first part of the word, and then final sounds would be T, B, and even an R, which, again, as a speech pathologist was a big surprise to me, that because we usually think about R as being one of those last consonants to develop. But, again, I think if you're looking at normal or typical development, R does come in a little sooner. And then by 3, we would want a kid to maybe have an S at the beginning, and this is, again, for 75% of children, and then add final sounds LG, and, again, some of those R endings, and a child would have 9 to 12 different consonant sounds. And I think that's where we're going to stop and kind of focus our attention today on children up to 3, because that's typically the population that Kate and I see. So, again, those are kind of the norms. And if there are therapists listening, you may have some additional little guidelines that you use in your own, kind of your own point of reference. But those, I think that's good information for parents to have, you know, that will say to me, what sound should he have? Or, you know, I'll have maybe a new little client, and a mom will say, well, she doesn't have an S yet, or she doesn't have a TH yet, and I usually explain that those sounds are later developing. So I'm glad that there's a resource on the website now that I can point people to. And, again, I may have a little different idea about all of those sounds, especially like K and G coming in by 24 months. But those are the norms that we're going to kind of go with. All right. Kate, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, finally, we're both on the right phones. Okay, let's move on and talk about red flags for a child's articulation skills. And, again, this is what means that a child warrants a referral to a speech-language pathologist for evaluation. And this would mean, too, that it's more indicative of a disorder versus a delay. And we've already talked about this a lot, but that a child is having numerous vowel errors. Again, remember, some errors are still acceptable at 2, but by age 3, you really want all those vowel errors to be cleared up, with the exception of maybe a kid who might say for you know, like bud. That would be okay, because those vowelized R's typically do take a little longer to develop. And these next ones, Kate, I think you'll recognize these, and I think we see these in lots of our kids. And, again, I love your point earlier about sometimes when we have late talkers, they're not saying enough words for us to even analyze what's going on. And then they start to talk, and sometimes you think, oh, gosh, no wonder you weren't talking. Boy, it is messed up because they have so many different errors and things that, again, aren't really expected. But the biggest thing is widespread deletion, or that would mean leaving off initial consonants, so that you would have a child that instead of saying more cookies might say oui, you know, and that's, and in context you might be able to figure out that that's more cookies, but if you have no clue what he wants, it's really hard to understand a child who leaves off those initial sounds. And if you'll remember, Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, those kids, like you said, the ones that usually I get them, they're not talking, but then I, you know, they make some progress and they're talking, and it's almost like they talk in all vowels, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I mean, it's hard to even, you know, especially when they start using phrases, they're using 3 and 4 and 5 words together. And I'm thinking, okay, what's that word without that consonant? It's not, like you said, if they give you the clue with pointing to something or talking about what you happen to have in front of them, then you kind of know. But when they're really just talking, telling you something, which is wonderful when kids do, it's really hard to understand what they're saying.
Yeah, there's a little guy that I've worked with for a long time who I don't see anymore because he's grown up and left me. He's over 3. But he's on the DVD, and his name is Max. He's got the cutest red hair. And he, oh, my gosh, his language, once we started therapy, just took off. You know, he was saying maybe 5 words when I did his initial evaluation, and then by the time I, you know, started treatment, he was up to, like, 25 words, you know, where you go, oh, my gosh, whoa. And then he was up to trying to do phrases within no time. But, boy, he had no starting consonants. And so, and you know, when he jumped to phrases, and there's a cute little scene on the DVD where we're looking at this little snow thing, and he says, I-E-U-U-E, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, you can see on my face, like, oh, my gosh, what is that? And he kept saying, I-E-U-U-E, and he was saying,
I see Christmas tree.
You got it. Yeah.
The snow globe. Thank you for the snow globe clue, or I would have been clueless. Yeah,
he
then
had snow
because
globe
you had the snow globe, you knew it. But otherwise, I eat, you know, you're
yeah.
thinking,
I know, and we had worked on IC for so long, kind of as a little carrier phrase.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, he did, his language caught up so beautifully, but it almost was even worse because he was talking in these long things that we wouldn't really understand. And he got so good at, you know, he kind of learned signs after he learned how to talk because it gave me and his mom a clue with what he was trying to say. And there's some examples of that, too, where he's saying, like, op, and I was saying, off, on, you know, and I wouldn't know that he's really putting a P there. And then, you know, he signs stop, and you think, oh, that's it. So those kids are kind of hard with the, and again, kids with apraxia are more likely to leave off the initial consonant, and sometimes they don't get any consonants in there, but when they do start to get some, sometimes they're at the end instead of the beginning, and that really is an odd pattern when you have it, you know, tacked on there on the end. But you don't want to, you know, you go with what a kid has. Boy, after he started getting a couple of final consonants, I kind of thought, oh, my goodness, let's try to get as many consonants in this part of the word as we can, because then that's going to give us more information than just the vowel. But, again, it is kind of an odd pattern when that happens. Okay, another red flag for a child's sound errors would be that a kid who uses lots of the back consonants, like K and G, to substitute for other consonants. So that would be, you know, like he says, a bus would be guh. You know, usually he's leaving off the S too. Or, you know, for mommy or daddy, you know, gaga, calling their dad dada. And that's something, I'm sure you've heard that pattern before too, Kate.
Yes, I have, and I do always think, okay, most kids at this age can't even get that sound, and this kid's using it for all the sounds that kids normally make in the front of their mouth. So I may not call it anything, but I think that is pretty atypical.
It is, yeah. And the phonological process or the pattern name for that, you know, is very complicated. It's called backing, meaning that you make all your consonant sounds at the back of your mouth rather than the front of your mouth. But that is an atypical pattern, and that's why sometimes a kid might qualify at 3 for speech therapy, you know, even if he's just got a couple of little backing errors because it's so atypical. You know, a kid who might do gog for dog. You know, that's really, we hear that, but by the time that they're 3, we want them to really have fixed all that and not be backing as often. So, again, that's a more serious substitution than, say, a kid who used a T or a D, well, a kid who used a T for that K or a D for that G. That's still an error. You know, tutti is still an error, but you hear lots more children, even with typically developing speech, say it that way rather than a kid who, you know, tried instead of puppy, might say, you know, cucky. You know, it just it's more off target. So again, that's a little more serious. The next one is something that's so unusual that I talked to you about earlier in the week, is I have three little girls on my caseload right now that are all using H for every initial consonant, and it is about to drive me up the wall because it is such an atypical pattern. A few years ago, I had a couple kids do it, but it's something that I don't see all the time, and I've got three kids doing that right now, and it was on the Stoll-Gammon list of red flags to use an H for a variety of initial consonant sounds. And, you know, that's like, you know, go is ho, or when they're saying, a little girl was trying to say to me, come on, come on, and she was doing ha-ah, ha-ah, and I had no clue what she was trying to say until she stood up and kind of waved her little arm. One of my little girls that's doing it was saying mommy, and now she's saying, you know, ha-he. She's put the H for a word that she said for a long time, and that's pretty stressful for her mom to kind of see it kind of mess up like that.
So yeah, again, you know, Laura, you were telling me, like you said, about this earlier in the week, and I don't think I've ever heard a kid who did that. So you see,
well, I've got three right now. You
yeah,
know,
isn't
tag
that
along
weird?
With me.
I don't think I've ever recognized that pattern, and you see more, quote unquote, speechy kids. I see certainly lots of language delayed kids. So, you know, I guess it's not a total shock, but I am surprised after this many years of working with language-delayed kids, I haven't heard that pattern. But when I do, I'm going to call you and say, oh, I got the H kid.
I know, it's unusual. And, again, I had not really heard it that much either. You know, a kid maybe every once in a while. But I've got three little girls right now that are doing that, and I think, what are the odds of that? Really, really odd. You know, and then I start, you know, how paranoid I am. What have I done? Made these initial consonants come in as H's. And I think the answer would be nothing. It just kind of is roll of the dice. But that is an odd pattern. Okay. And the other big red flag that lets you know that a child's speech sound skills are not developing as they should and that you need to go ahead and have them see a speech language pathologist for evaluation would be leaving off ending sounds or final consonants after age 3. And again, what we were looking at a second ago said that 75% of even all kids with no speech language issues at all would be including some final sounds by age 2. So if you have a child that's not doing any by age 3, that is a big red flag, and you want to go ahead and pop that kid in speech and get some ending sounds on those words. And again, there's variation in individual children. You know, some moms might be listening thinking, well, gosh, my oldest kid that didn't need any speech therapy still has some sounds out of order, you know, when they were even 4 or 5. And that's fine. You're going to see that happen. My own children, you know, would have a smattering of little errors here and there. But when you have those errors that we just talked about are considered more serious. And so, again, that's something that you don't want to let go for a long, long time. You don't want to get a kid in kindergarten and, you know, they're still not including final sounds. You want to go ahead and have that speech referral. I had an interesting IFSP earlier in the day, Kate. It's a mom who happens to be a psychologist, and she works with lots of older children. And she said she's just gotten an onslaught of kids lately that are 5 and are 6 and hardly have any words, and they haven't had speech at all.
Oh.
And she has, you know, she's totally shocked by it. And, you know, we feel like our city is, you know, I think our early intervention program has done a really good job with local pediatricians, you know, and even for us, if we don't get them till 2.5 or 2, and we think, gosh, this kid should have been in 6 months ago, you know, that's shocking. But can you imagine a 5 or 6-year-old that only comes in with a handful of words, and he got the referral to go see somebody and be evaluated because he's gotten into kindergarten and really feel pretty minimally verbal? But that was a shock to me today.
Ladies,
yeah.
We have a caller.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
What's that?
Do you have a question? You want to tell us who you are?
My name is Josette, and I have a little guy who will be 4 next month who has apraxia.
Wow.
And he's doing wonderfully, I think, you know, with them as far as where we've started at. And I just want to say I love listening to you guys, and, you know, your clients are so lucky to have you, because I want you to know, as much as you think other, you know, speech therapists are like you. They're not. But he gets a lot of services.
Joe Beth, now, I say that a lot, don't I? This is Kate. I like to make that point a lot that Laura always says, speech therapists do this or say this or should do this, and I always say, well, they should maybe, but they don't. Laura is really, really great with
that is very true.
Yeah.
I think, you know, everything that I've learned that I'm using to help my son, I mean, I pretty much learned from listening to your show and from your website. But
aww,
he was in early intervention until he was 3.
Wow.
And we just did an IEP now since he's
going to
be 4. And he just started preschool this week. His first day was Monday. And he's got an IEP now, and he'll be getting his speech therapist is there daily, or Monday through Thursday.
That's great.
She's
them
every
day?
Yep, 4 days a week, and she's
wow.
there every day, yep. And
what
I don't know if it's so much one-on-one with him, you know, as being with the group, because there's other kids, I'm sure, that are getting the services in his class.
Yeah, what state are you in, Josette?
I'm Nebraska.
Okay, good. Good. Well, that is great that you called to say those nice things. I'm a little, that's going to make me a little weepy this afternoon. I've had kind of a hard week.
She's exhausted. I keep saying it from finishing the apraxia. Now, so have you ordered or thinking about ordering?
I have not, but I'm definitely thinking about it, and that was one of my questions calling was, he, you know, at 2 and we didn't start services till 2.5. That's what you were just talking about. And I'm a registered nurse, and I work with some pediatricians. And, you know, I feel kind of guilty we didn't start sooner, but I just kind of wanted to wait it out. And we started initially when he was right at 2.5.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, he hardly had any words. I mean, he had not, I think maybe he had just started saying mom.
Wow.
At that point, and he used duh for everything. You know, he'd point to something or want me to come with him, and he'd go duh, duh, duh.
I believe
duh,
we've
duh.
Referred to him metaphorically a number of times. The duck kid. Yeah, we've certainly seen a lot of kids that present just like that.
Well, how's
he
doing
changed
now?
A lot. Now I'd say he's becoming even a little more conversational just in the last, you know, few months, especially with me. I would say that, I mean, he's using phrases and short sentences, not long
Yay.
Sentences. And I can understand a good, you know, 80 to 90% of what he says. Other people I don't think can.
Yeah.
I felt like when he had a little friend over this weekend, and I kind of felt like I was interpreting the whole time, and then finally I'm like, I just got to walk away and let them, you know, try to understand each other.
Isn't that hard?
I kept looking in, and the other little boy would say, what did you say? What did you say? And I try to interpret for him. And
then, does he get frustrated when his little friends don't understand, or does he?
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah.
You know, he's had some mannerisms. I was talking to his pediatrician last week, and early on when we've been to some different speech therapists, and I've done a lot of private therapy off and on with some different people in town, and then my bill would just get too high, and I'd back off for a while, you know, and then he'd be reevaluated by somebody else. And a couple different times people have said to me initially when they meet him, you know, well, have you thought about having, you know, inquiring about autism-type diagnosis? And then the second time they meet him, they're like, you know, I can't believe we even thought that. Because he just is so quiet, reserved, and it's kind of acts a little different when he's in a new situation.
Right.
But then when he's not in that new situation anymore, he's just a completely different kid. And they, you know, feel like they don't have any question about that, and his pediatrician's not concerned about it.
Right.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of people, we've seen that a lot where kids, mm-hmm. where we originally start to, you know, we're kind of worried about that, and then we kind of get them over the hump, and they're really interacting and really social. And then we think, no, this is just really a speech sound disorder,
mm-hmm.
it's just really apraxia. And that does happen a lot. Sometimes, though, it kind of happens the other way, too. Parents really hang on to it's just apraxia when it really is autism, too. And autism is kind of, Kate'll joke and say, the big A, you know, and apraxia would be the little A. And that point, you know, where apraxia is not the main issue, it's just part of the bigger issue. But that's great that he's doing so well now.
But he seems to really, you know, interact with kids good. And we go to the park, and I can tell he just wants to, you know, he'll go right over there, and he'll be with them, and but he really can't say much to him, you know, and you can just tell there's that. Like, he just kind of stops, and he knows that they're not going to understand. He's very timid. I mean, he seems very smart, and he knows that
yeah.
he's not going to be able to say it right, or whatever he wants to do, he's not going to be able to do quite right. He just won't attempt it.
And they do start to get really self-conscious, especially the smart ones.
Right.
The smart ones really do, and Kate talks about all the time about how so smart a lot of these kids are, and then they do, you know, unfortunately realize, oh, no, she's not going to get a thing I say. Why am I going to even bother to say it? Oh, no, I don't want to embarrass myself. And you can see them almost get embarrassed like that.
Right.
Uh-huh, and I think that's him. We have an OT sees him also, and he's had some motors, more gross motor things that, I mean, like jumping, throwing, catching, just kind of balance issues, and they're seeing him for that.
Well, he has global dyspraxia then. He's got coordination problems kind of throughout his body, doesn't he?
Yes, and a lot of fine motor things he can do pretty well. We've been here trying to get him to jump forever, and both feet finally left the ground probably about 4 or 6 weeks ago.
Wow.
Now he jumps all the time. It's like it just clicked, and now he can just jump, you know, whenever he wants to.
Yeah.
But lately he's been kind of testing me. He'll say, you know, a lot of times, you know, he'd say something, and I didn't really understand it, and I just kind of play it off like, oh, really? But now he kind of knows that I do that. And just recently he'll say, did you hear me, Mom? What did I say? And if I don't repeat exactly how he said it, then he knows that I didn't quite understand what
he
said.
You can't cheat anymore. You cannot cheat. He knows. Yeah, but he is getting a little frustrated, huh, when he's not understood then.
Yeah, a little bit. And I was I guess regarding your topic today, you know, something that I've noticed that he's done, and I think I'm seeing an improvement in this, but the B, P, and M lip sounds, he was not making those at all. Other sounds he was making, and those I could tell he, like, totally left off, and I talked to his speech therapist about it, and, you know, she said we'd work on it, but we didn't really. I just found that on your website last night, and I was excited to read through it, because I think he's saying them more. But for so long, he didn't. I kept thinking every time he'd say something, I thought if I put a V, P, or an M in front of this, will it make a word, you know, because I knew that's what he was leaving off all the time.
Wow, but that was so smart of you to kind of know, gosh, that's the sound that he's missing. And a lot of apraxic kids do that. Kate and I have talked about this a lot. They almost have a little, you know, they can't motor plan how to get those lips together. And sometimes then, you know, and I'm so touchy-feely with kids, I'm grabbing their faces and just pushing their lips together when they can't do it. You know, and it's almost like they're so sensitive to that and reactive a little bit when you start doing that too. I mean, that's how foreign that pattern is to them, and it looks almost, some kids, like it kind of hurts, you know, like I just really can't do that. And there's some great clips on the Apraxia DVD with lots of kids who aren't getting their lips together like that. Sometimes they'll put their teeth on their bottom lip, you know, and kind of almost do an F or a V to avoid their lips touching. Does he just leave it off altogether?
Well, you know, I think he kind of almost avoids it. I feel like, what we've evaluated so far, I don't really feel like it's more like so much of a muscle tone issue, but it's almost like if he were to put his lips together or something, that would just take a lot of effort.
Right. And
you know, like he's just going to avoid it because it seems like a lot of effort to put his lips together and make those sounds or something.
Well, I hope what you're talking about that you found on the website is a new article. I took a day off on Monday because I was so sick with my allergies and just kind of overtired, and wrote it. It's early speech sound cues, and there are like 9 different ideas on there for how to get P, B, or M. Did you see that? Mm-hmm. Is that the article?
Yeah, I just saw it last night, so I haven't really done anything, but I read through it.
You know, and a lot of times the very first idea there is to put chapstick or lip gloss on his lips, and because, or a food like pudding or yogurt or something that's really, really yummy, and let him just really practice getting his lips together like that. And you might take, you know, you might do that several times over the course of a week before you could even really get that sound. And that's okay. And like I was talking about earlier with kids that look like, you know, it's painful to do that, you are just going to kind of have to back up and maybe do some of that stuff first and then get it into a sound and then a word. But as soon as you start hearing the P's, B's, and M's, you do, and as soon as he can kind of do it in isolation or on its own, you want to quickly move it into a word, because sometimes we get kind of so caught up in making the sound just right that we lose sight of, gosh, our goal here is speech in a word, not necessarily just a pretty P by itself. So practice those kinds of things with him, and then just as soon as he can do the, you know, get it at the sound level, then you want to move it to a word. Let me ask you this. Can he do, like, lip smacking and popping and, like, those silly little car sounds, like, will he do those kinds of things with his lips?
He, like, could, you know, like you'd say, like a baby blow raspberries, he could blow like that.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He'll make sounds, but I wouldn't say that they're, you know, as good as other kids could
right.
do it, or he would try to do it, but
right.
yeah, it wouldn't be quite like what you're looking for, I don't think, you know.
Yeah, and just have him do a lot of that kind of stuff in play, you know, when you're playing cars and trucks and that kind of thing. Any little stuff that where you could see that even if it's not, you know, even if you're not being on the up and up, you might have to trick him, you know, to kind of get those little
huh.
lips together when you're playing. Those are good ideas, and I'll do those kinds of things with kids, you know, just in play way before we start working on that sound. And even at four, he's not too old. To do some
That's what I was kind of questioning. Your video, would it still be pretty appropriate? I mean, where he's at now and he is saying some sentences and stuff, that the video would still be appropriate for me to get and watch probably
well,
and helpful?
I'm, since you were so nice to me and made me nearly cry on that day that I am so weepy. Anyway, I'm just going to send it to you and let you kind of be the judge of that. And then you can let me know how you liked it and how it worked with him and all that kind of stuff. But I'll be glad to just send you one. If you want to just shoot me an email at laura@teachmetotalk.com with your address, and that'll be my way of thanking you for saying such nice things to me on a day when I really needed to hear that.
Well, I truly believe mean that, and that would be awesome. And I will pass it along to our speech therapist also, because I think, I mean, I just love the way you interact with kids is so good. You know, I feel like to me, and I mean other teachers and speech therapists are like that, but like interacting with kids is not just natural to me. You know, I mean, getting down and playing on the floor and stuff does not come naturally, and I feel like I really have to, like, work when I'm just even playing with him, even though I love him and it's fun.
I know.
It's hard to do that naturally, you know, and so you just watching your little video clips online, you know, it's helpful to see how you should do that to get a good emotional response out of the kids and hopefully
well,
bring along the words.
I will tell you, Josette, though, you can fake that. Even if it's not natural, I promise. You can really fake that. You,
not always natural.
It's not. For some people, it's really not. And I've had lots of moms that by the time the kid is turning three, I'm thinking, boy, she is pretty good now. And sometimes some moms do it to the point where I think, oh, my goodness, you're doing your Laura imitation now, because it is so unnatural to them that when they first start to do it, they really almost look like they're acting, but after a while, it does get easier and easier and easier the longer that you do it. And Kate talks about that a lot, about how moms that don't naturally have that kind of playfulness, you really can make yourself learn how to do it. And that's when kids really get into it and really almost forget that they're practicing. You know, a 2-year-old wouldn't know that, but a 4-year-old really does kind of know, oh, boy, we're in speech right now. But if you can take some of those things and make it playful and a part of your play, it's going to make it so much more fun for him.
Well,
yeah,
and I would say just because I've learned so much from her DVDs and also just talking about these things so much, but it really helps to see it done, and especially with kind of those things she was talking about earlier about the doing specific sounds, and it's like, well, how do you make fun? Or how do you make, you know, these kind of things that aren't really naturally part of play, but to see it. So I'm glad you're getting it, but if you've not been lucky enough to win it today, then I would have said still buy it, because especially if you say it's not necessarily, and I don't think I'm as natural, I mean, I think I've gotten to be pretty good at it over the years, but I think Laura probably had that more innately than I did. Certainly as far as, you know, the education to learn how to put those specific activities into play. But when you see it and see it and see it and see it, then you can really, you just totally imitate the way she's doing it, and it becomes much easier. It's so hard to read it and to not actually see it. So if enjoy the DVD. I'm sure that it really will help a lot, because Laura is the apraxia queen, as I like to call her.
Call me that. I think somebody else has that title. That would be Nancy Kaufman's title. That would not be my title. But anyway, just shoot me that email, Josette, and then after you watch it, send me an email back and let me know, you know, what helped you and what worked. And so I hope that helps
you.
Thanks so much for calling and sharing your story today. We'd love to hear from mom.
It does sound low.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say, it does sound like your son has made terrific progress. And so you must be doing something right working with him, because that's to go from where he was at 2.5 to where he sounds like he is now is pretty darn good for an apraxic kid. So you are definitely, you're getting there.
You a lot of things I'd read were, you know, sounded more grim, and has made good progress in the last year and a half.
So. Well, you know, and that's why I did the website, Josette, because I would get so sick and tired of parents saying to me, I would meet them at the door and they would be crying, and I would say, what's wrong? I would think they were going to tell me somebody died or something happened, and they would say, I've just been on the internet reading about apraxia. Oh, no, he's never going to talk. And, you know, I would spend 30 minutes saying, yes, he is. Yes, he is. Look where we've come from. So that's one of the reasons that I did the website, is to say if you've got a kid in early intervention and if you start therapy at 2, he has a very good prognostic indicator just that we started so young and because his little brain is able to be changed. So it sounds like you've done great.
Thank you guys for talking to me today.
Well, thanks for calling. It's great to have calls from real-life moms who are fighting the fight and benefiting from the information we share, because we talk about it so much, it's kind of fun for us to get to share it with somebody who's interested. So
it is. Thank you. You made our day, Josette.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that was nice. Boy, did I need to hear that today.
That was a great caller, wasn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I hope that she gets the DVD and likes it and it helps. And I do think it would have been appropriate for her to get it anyway. I mean, even though it's sore. And, you know, a lot of people will say that because they'll say, gosh, you know, I'm looking at your clips online. I get this email all the time, and they'll say, but it looks like you just have babies in there. Yeah, but if your kid is still at that developmental level, you can't really look at the age. You've got to kind of look at what the kids are working on to know whether it's going to benefit your kid. And so in the DVD, it takes children who were nonverbal, and then we have clips of children who were just minimally verbal. They're just starting to imitate, and then some kids who were doing single words, and then we're working on phrases with the kids, and then there's a big section at the end on moving to sentences. So unless you have a kid who is really talking at the sentence level consistently and not making very many speech sounds, it's still going to be a good resource. And especially if you have a kid even who is talking in those sentences but that's still got lots of sound substitutions, all the tricks are in there too, Kate, where our popper sounds and our tongue tappers and our throaty sounds, and, you know, how to really cue those and how to work on those even with those kids who were doing it, you know, at the sentence level. So I think it would have been appropriate anyway.
Right. And, you know, it sounded like that he was doing really, really well, especially with her, but that he was still pretty inhibited with other kids and people who weren't familiar with his speech patterns. And
and
we see that a lot. I mean, it's not uncommon for us to work with a child and we think, wow, he is doing so well. And mom may agree, you know, oh, yes. And then, like, at school, if they go to preschool or they, you know, are in some kind of Mother's Day out, or they might not say much of anything there because they're inhibited by the fact that they know I talk and people look at me like, what are you talking about?
I know.
And it may be that those, I don't know this, but Laura, you may, it may be until those kids really get to be more intelligible or more easily understood by an unfamiliar listener that they're not really going to let their guard down. So she's got to keep targeting, along with, of course, the speech therapist, getting him to be understood by somebody who doesn't know his errors.
Right, right.
So he's with it enough to know, hey, look at me like I'm crazy when I try and say stuff. You know, it does not come out right. And so until that language is what I would call cleaned up, you know, so that other people who don't know him have some idea what he's saying, he may not really share too much with other people because he knows it just doesn't sound right. So anyway, I would say, yeah, She'll get some benefit from, because it is hard to think about how do you make these things fun and how do you do this in a playful, because even though he's 4 and he is going to have some awareness, trust me when I say, even if he's aware mommy's playing the speech game, he's going to get that it's a game, he's going to get that it's fun, and she's going to get much more effort from him, you know, because he thinks it's fun as opposed to, let's look at these pictures and label them, you know, the way, I mean, he may be a kid who loves pictures, but, you know, most kids want to have fun as they're, quote, unquote, working. I guess most humans do. I think I probably do, but.
Me too.
Right. So she can,
use some of those strategies, even though he is aware enough to know mommy's, you know, mommy's making me work on my speech. But if she keeps it playful and fun, he will be willing to work on his speech a lot more than if she doesn't. So,
you know, and the more I, you know what I think it is a lot with apraxic kids too, is that they, it has to be so automatic. I mean, they have to almost overlearn anything from, you know, just that repetition over and over and over and over, and they're going to do that better in play before they're willing to kind of go out on that limb at preschool and at church and, you know, when they're playing with the friend. Wasn't that just kind of heartbreaking where she said that the friend was over and the friend kept going, what'd you say? What'd you say? You know, and she sounded like such a good mom, too, that she was kind of there and interpreting for him. And lots of moms have to do that for a long time. I mean, it's not uncommon for a kid to have an apraxia diagnosis at 5, 6, and 7 and still, you know, need mom to interpret, even for dad. So sometimes, you know, he's going to get enough practice to kind of be on his own at school. And, I don't think that's ever a bad deal for a mom to kind of hang around a little bit during a play date and if a kid's really having trouble kind of bailing out like that.
Right.
I think that's
I'm sorry.
Me too.
I was going to say something, but then I decided not to. Oh, I was just going to say sometimes I still have parents who, I mean, as I see a child, I don't necessarily understand, especially those kids who, oh, boy, they're getting to be very verbal. Their language sounds pretty darn good. And I have to look to mom, especially those moms like she was who are really involved and really know their kids so well. And, you know, I'll kind of look over and she'll mouth the words, he wants more whatever, you know.
And I'm always saying, thank you.
Yeah.
Back, and I'm glad that mom did that, you know, because I think, gosh, you know, and I feel like I understand, you know, kids that I've been with a while, I kind of, you know, start to recognize their patterns and stuff and can understand a lot of that. But it is pretty telling, like when a mom will say, you know, his grandmother kept him over the weekend, and boy, she didn't have nearly the, you know, luck understanding him like we do. Or if, you know, sometimes don't you hear, Kate, where you'll be at a meeting and like in the OT will say, gosh, I don't understand anything he says.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that makes you think, oh, gosh, I've really been interpreting, you know, a lot by context, or mom's been helping me out a whole lot. And then you realize, oh, boy, do we still have a ways to go. So especially with those kids that are trying to talk on those longer phrases and sentences, and they're still kind of messing up those sounds. Sometimes it's a long haul. You have to just kind of keep at it, and then eventually it does get better. Okay, the article that I started talking to her about is called Early Speech Sound Cues, and that was that's also in that intelligibility section, and it does take the early consonant sounds that we just talked about at the very beginning of the show when we were talking about what sounds you should have by what age. It goes through those earliest consonants, PBM, TDN, H, and W, and those are all the consonants that children should master by the time that they're 2.5 to 3. You know, those are the ones that developmentally are nearly always in and at the beginning and at the end. And there's a whole article of ways for you to help cue your child and help your child learn to say that. And you can just kind of look through there. So if you have a kid that's not doing PB or M, you know, like we talked about the chapstick or lip gloss idea where you really help them feel their lips together, or blowing raspberries or doing car noises, like, you know, where they flutter their lips like that, that really kind of helps build that awareness in and that kind of motor coordination to even get their lips together. A thing I do a lot is practice air kisses and have them really kind of practice getting their lips together. We talked about maybe putting yogurt or peanut butter or pudding or something on their lips and letting them get their lips in the right place. But the second, I mean, I don't even do those things with kids that can make a PB or an M. You know, you always want to think about, you don't want to start with the most help or with the most basic movement unless you really have to. These ideas would be for a kid like Josette was just talking about, a kid who never does a PB or an M. So those would be ideas. If you've got a kid that sometimes puts it on at the end or, you know, can do it like in Mama, but he can't say any other M words, I wouldn't necessarily back up and do these ideas. These are just ideas for kids who can't seem to get the movement at all. And, again, the theory is you want to start with the lowest level of assistance you can provide. And that might, for some kids, you know, you can say, look, do this. You know, that's your popper. Show me your popper. And they can pop it right out. And so for those kids, you would just go with it from there and immediately try to get that sound in a word versus backing up and doing all that, you know, chapstick and pudding and all that. So don't get so carried away with the different idea and overuse those kinds of tricks if you don't need them. And I think a lot of therapists make that mistake, don't you? Kate, don't you sit in meetings and hear people talk about something like oral motor exercises or all these ideas? And you think, why are you doing that? He can already do the sound. He just has the right place in a word. Why are you doing that? You're wasting time.
That's how I look at it, yeah. I think a lot of speech therapists who aren't necessarily, how would I put it, necessarily very, well, that's not even true, who don't have as many successes with apraxic kids do get hung up on those things. And I do kind of feel like with a better, more progressive approach, they could make a lot faster progress.
Right.
And not get stuck. And I think in the readings I've done, I think, I want to say Nancy Kaufman really kind of talks about don't spend too much time, or maybe it was Dr. Hammer who did the, you know, we went to see him speak many years ago. He changed my life. Don't get hung up on individual sounds.
Right,
know,
get
because,
it to words.
Yeah, yeah, kids don't necessarily, particularly apraxic kids, don't necessarily make the leap from I can do a B in isolation, now I can say ball and bat and boo. It just doesn't necessarily work that way. So I kind of lean towards try and get the word, try and get the word, or
right,
some approximation of the word.
Right.
Because
and then back up and try the sound. If you're not successful getting it in a word, then teach the sound. Don't start out thinking, boy, I've got to teach this movement. Then I can spend 3 months teaching the sound. And then 6 months later, lo and behold, we might try a word.
Right.
No, go for the word. And then if you can't get the word, back up and try for the sound or the syllable. And then if you can't get the syllable, try for the sound. And then if you can't get the sound, then back up and do all of these other ideas
right,
to help your kid kind
well,
of
and the other thing about apraxic kids is so often they might not have those bilabial sounds, the B, the P, the M, but they might have some other sounds that theoretically, as far as typical development, they wouldn't have. But
right,
they have them. So my theory is use the sounds they have.
Absolutely.
And build on that. Don't start with, well, you know, babies have B's, P's, and M's, so we're going to get B's, P's, and M's out of you.
Right.
Because
when
there's
you
a lot of practice.
It,
sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you could get those other sounds. Move on to the word.
Right.
Try go with a G. Yeah.
Right, because a lot of times those kids do have other sounds that, I mean, I have come to learn over the years they probably, in theory, shouldn't have, developmentally, typical development-wise, shouldn't have, but they have them. So, hey, you know, let's use what they have and build on that. But anyway.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Okay, so there's some ideas for P's, B's, and M's at the beginning, and then there are the little names, like Kate talked about us hearing David Hammer. He really introduced us kind of to the concept of not calling, not saying to a two-year-old, it's your P sound. You know, he talked about using the how you make the production properties of a sound to kind of call it something that would mean something to a two-year-old. So you call your P's your poppers. You might call your B your big popper. And so there are some little names, some little tricks there that we use. And some of those are, again, some of David Hammer's initial sounds. Some of them I think they've just kind of morphed as I've practiced and used them with different children. So there's some ideas there. In the DVD, my sweet little friend named Max, we called an M or a M his Max sound because that's what his name started with, and we worked on that, you know, sound for a long time. So there's some ideas about that too. Then there are also ideas for T, D, and N, and those are kind of your middle-of-the-mouth sound, your alveolars, if you're a speech pathologist and are still going by those real picky names. But there are those ideas there. for getting a kid to be able to do a TD or an N, and I think we're almost out of time. We'll probably pick up with these kind of sound cues next time and talk more about what we use and the tricks that we use there too. But the thing that I want to leave you with today is the point that we just made a second ago. It's so important, I'm going to say it again. You always start with trying to get the word, and then if you can't get the word, then you back up and try to get it in a syllable, then you back up and try to get it in a sound, and then if you can't get it in a sound, you work on the movement. But do not do it the other way. Start really at the hardest thing first and then work your way backwards, because that way you're going to get more success there. And all you always end up getting it. A lot of times you'll get it in the word when you could have, again, wasted so much time when you work at it the other way. So
right, and
that little clue.
I think inherent in that is that kids, particularly, I mean, if this is what we're talking about, an apraxic child, even though they may have some inhibition because they know that their sounds don't come out the way that other people's do and they try and it's not right, but they're generally highly motivated to communicate. And I don't know that many young kids are highly motivated to make a P sound or a D sound or a B sound. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
You use their natural interest in whatever it is you're playing with to motivate them to help. I say get the heightened arousal level that allows them or enables them to able to get a word out. But it's hard. You know, I think you do a great job. A lot of times those get stuck on the oral motor exercises. Speech therapists don't try and make it fun at all. You know, they
right.
just sit there and say,
let's wiggle our tongues
yeah.
10 times. Why? For
meanwhile,
what reason? Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the kids, you know, off the table, they've crawled out of the high chair that she tried to strap him in, and he's running around the backyard with something, you know, to play with. So, yeah, it can be really hard to make those playful, and it's important, I think, to try really, really hard to keep that enjoyable because it's not necessarily the best fun, but
yeah,
can be done if you do it right.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, we're going to pick up here next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.